Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
I'm Dr. Redmond.
And hoo boy, are we almost done this first season of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. It's something of a relief. I mean, we're not actually finished yet, but we're close enough that I'm, you know, starting to calm down about having to watch any more. Well, I guess really look forward to the break we're going to get to take between seasons of watching Beyond Borders. Although, you know, well, we'll talk about what happens this week, but it's like, we might have found the least terrible episode of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders this week.
Okay, so we're probably in agreement about which one.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
It will have to be the best.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably. All right, so let's get to it. Our first episode is what?
Ikenisa.
Okay.
When an American college student working in Johannesburg is killed and his brother goes missing, the international response team suspects a gang could be behind both. Jack works the case with Lieutenant Ananda Doshi, a profiler he's worked with before, who has an unorthodox style of investigation.
Yes.
There you go.
He doesn't like mediums. We learn about Jack this time. It's not a surprise, but yeah, he's not a fan of mediums.
Oh, none of them do. They all think she's crazy.
Yeah, they all think she's extremely nuts, which, you know, thanks, guys.
And as Jack said, well, yeah, but you caught the guy. She caught it. She caught the killer the last time they worked together. She's the one that did it. Yeah, but still doesn't agree.
Doesn't agree and doesn't believe. So there you go. So we got a lot of kidnapping. We got a lot of murder. And it's actually not that hard of a case to solve. Like, they go very deep into it, but all of the victims are posed to look exactly like a murder from 30 years earlier. Like, distinctly exactly like it, and they figure that right away. And then they quickly realize that everyone who is a victim is the either family member or person who was in the cops, in the police during apartheid. So it is not too hard to figure out what the motive is. It's not a real twist this week when it turns out that the mummy is the real villain. Yeah, they hired the guy who played the mummy. Like, I'm not saying Arnold Vosloo's a limited performer, but come on, it's like you don't hire him to not play the villain, do you? I've seen television. But yes, it turns out that even though people are getting revenge for a brutal slaughter of, you know, 24 anti-apartheid protesters, it was a white guy who was doing it because he was mad that they had murdered his sister, a cop, to try and trigger justifying this kind of pogrom of
against the
anti-apartheid people. So
yeah,
he's still very mad about it, quite understandably.
Well, he only found out about it. That's why he's so mad about it. Well, I mean, yeah, you have to make sure, because maybe there are people who are taking our advice and not watching this.
That's true. Yes, he has only just found out about it, and that's why he's gone on this murderous rampage.
Because there were three men
who
murdered this white cop, and of course she was female.
Of course.
And murdered her and posed her so that people would get so angry they would set up this special unit.
Yeah.
Of cops. And this is in the dying days of the apartheid regime.
When they were just willing to kill anybody to keep that thing going.
To keep it going. Like, it's a strange, strange thing. I mean, the thing is it's pretty typical that, I mean, it's not a surprise. And then of course, this special team, then, of course, everybody's behind them when they go out and kill these anti-apartheid activists, 14 of them. And, and then the Truth and Reconciliation, well, within a few years, apartheid has fallen.
Yep.
And then you have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Which I know they had to do it, but ugh. They mentioned briefly what the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, commission was. And it was, if you tell us all of the evil stuff you did during apartheid, you won't go to jail for it.
Yeah.
Because we can't build the future on lies that you didn't do. And I'm like, I'm kind of sad that all of the, you know, fascist mass murderers who tried to genocide an entire population, I'm sad that they didn't, you know, get hanged at the end of the apartheid, but I understand why it was necessary to do that. It's just like, they let people go who were, like, planning to poison the water supply of all of the slums of Johannesburg.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real thing that they tried to do.
Yeah, and I mean, the history of apartheid.
Oh, it's just terrifying.
And yet, I mean, and of course, Canada bears some blame in it because when they decided to set it up, they used the model of Canadian reservations.
Yep, it was a terrible system. Oh, terrible. Do you want to hear are you ready for an unbelievably fun fact I learned? So the guy whose job it was to poison all of the slums of Johannesburg to kill all the black people, when the writing on the wall appeared that they weren't going to go through with his plan to poison all of the black people of Johannesburg, he's like, well, I got a perfectly good drug lab here, and I'm an evil human being. Why not just make like half a ton of ecstasy and spend the next decade just getting rich selling ecstasy? So if you bought ecstasy in the 1990s, chances are it was made in the drug lab owned by the South African government by a guy who was giving up on his plan to poison all black people. That's a true story.
Yeah, well, I never did anything like that, so...
Okay. No, but the point is, it's like, these guys were every kind of evil. I don't have to feel, And that's comes down to. It's like, there's no part at which the apartheid regime, there's no way in which they weren't evil. Like, they knew they were on the wrong side of things. They knew they weren't going to be able to keep their power going unless they mass murdered everyone. And they tried to.
Yes, and then they would have had nobody to do the crap jobs.
Do all of the work, I know.
All the work. I mean, that's because that's what all of these suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
What they did. They came into town. They came into Johannesburg. They worked. They cooked. They cleaned. They did the garbage.
To the reservations.
They did the whole thing. And then they had to go back.
Oh, yeah. It was disgusting. And yeah, well,
and if you want to know some of the worst of it, I mean, all you have to do is listen to or go read Trevor Noah's book.
Yeah. Oh God, isn't it fantastic?
You know, because his father was white.
Yep.
And therefore his grandmother hid him.
Yeah.
Because of course it was illegal for a black and a white person to have sex.
Yep. Oh my God. So yeah, just based on his skin tone, he had to be constantly afraid of being arrested.
Well, no, he had to be constantly afraid of being found out. His parents.
Yes, would be the ones arrested.
His grandmother, right?
Yeah, well, honestly, you say he wasn't afraid of being arrested. Well, no, because he was too young. But the fact is, he still would have been, you know, thrown in a state orphanage when his when his grandmother was jailed. So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's called child prison. I really recommend the book. I've read the book too. It's an amazing book. But yeah, like it's an interesting story because they're touching on this really horrific time in the history of that country and talking about how that echoes down and the absolute depths of depravity to which the government is willing to go to hold on to its unjustly gotten power.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I hate to say it, but the Boers have, they know they have no right to be there. Like, at some core level, they know they have no right to be there. Like, the only justification for them being there is racist ideas that you need white people to civilize Africa. That's it.
Yeah. And they are I don't think any of my ancestors actually went to South Africa, but it's really weird listening to Afrikaans because it's
You have very Dutch relatives, so
it's a version of Dutch, right? It's just a dialect of Dutch, and it was goeiedag. Yeah, okay. Can I do it? Yes.
Yeah, no, Afrikaans is just a kind of Dutch, and it's fascinating because, like you say, you know, when you got ancestors who were involved in the most nightmarish parts of, you know, colonialism, the history of colonialism was the treatment, because it dragged on for so long.
Yeah,
like,
South Africa.
All of the other colonialists kind of fell apart after World War II. Like, colonialism just kind of crumbled after World War II, but they hung on so long in South Africa. It's kind of shocking. You know, they managed to keep it going as long as they did.
Well, it wasn't until until basically the 80s when Margaret Thatcher, bless her soul, there were some things, right?
Stop trading with South Africa. Yeah.
Well, and the United States, everybody just shut South Africa down. Yeah. You have to drop. And Nelson Mandela, I don't know what would have happened if they had ever killed him. They just kept him in prison for decades.
Oh, no, because they were terrified. Like, as long as he was alive and in prison, they'd be like, we're a system of justice, blah, 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 blah. If they had found some pretext to execute the man, they were terrified of a full-on civil war.
Yeah, and they would have had
it. No, they would have had it. Yes, absolutely. They would have had that full-on civil war, but that's why they didn't kill him.
Like, people stopped buying South African diamonds, for God's sake.
Yep. South African diamonds, South African grapefruit, South African meat throughout Africa.
Anything that came from South
Anything from South Africa was boycotted, and it was fantastic. Like, and it actually got the job done. And by the way, that's why boycotts are so important, and that's why the right wing will tell you that it's immoral to boycott corporations.
Yeah.
Because boycotts are the only thing corporations are scared of. They own the government, they've blackmailed the courts, right? But if you in any way hurt the flow of money going into that corporation, all of their power immediately disappears. They are incredibly weak against boycotts. So remember that. They don't care if you sue them, they don't care if you try to pass a law, they only care if you affect their bottom line. So if you want to hurt a corporation, start a boycott. The only way to do it.
And make sure that everybody gets on board. Nestle had to change some of the dumping that it did in Africa.
Yep.
Because of boycotts. And then of course there was our boycott of don't buy Thai.
Yeah. The whole Thailand massively changed its laws about, you know, sexual exploitation of children because of the anti-Thai boycotts. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, this stuff can work. But then what's interesting when you watch the episode, right, is it's really not that complicated a story to unwind, just because.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't finished telling the story, though, right? I probably should, so that people. No, we got sidetracked.
It happened.
But I should finish telling the story. We always get sidetracked. Okay, so what happens then, 30 years, so these three men,
yes,
who were this vicious squad, who headed this vicious squad, were given new identities,
mm-hmm.
and one of them left and went to
America,
and the other two stayed in South Africa, and one of them ended up, had a conscience.
Yeah.
And was dying of cancer. And so he went and saw the brother of this cop that they had killed and told him the whole story.
Yeah.
And then that set him off. And he decided that he was going to kill all of the blood relatives of these three men.
Yeah.
And as luck would have it, or bad luck would have it, these two boys had been sent. And only one of them gets killed.
Because the other one's adopted.
But that's the whole thing, right? Is that it took them a while to figure out, well, why wasn't the other one killed as well? Well, yes. He wasn't the blood he wasn't a blood kin of the man. And this guy somehow or another knew that. The child was adopted. That was, so what happens is that, you know, he manages to kill the one and he manages to kill the children. And he's going to kill the daughter who is pregnant and her child at the end of the other one. And, it actually kind of makes sense and it actually tracks.
Tracks logically. The guy's got a completely understandable motive.
Yeah. You know. And the guy who is sitting in Washington.
Yeah.
The father of these two children who've gone back to work. Well, they're both in their teens, right? Who's gone back to work for the aunt.
Yeah.
You know, just, well, I don't know why Dad wouldn't come back to South Africa, you know? And, well, of course they didn't know. I mean, and that's just like, you know, one of those things at the beginning, you know, and you don't even think anything about it.
Yeah, it pays off
later
in the episode.
You're about halfway through the episode. Yeah. And then why the one child is left alive.
Yeah, no, we understand all of that. And so, so it's the normal thing. They just say, okay, well, who was the third member of your group of guys who executed people who were working to end apartheid? And so the wife gives them a heads up. They run and they rescue the last people.
Yeah.
And then we have a happy ending because they're going to throw Arnold Vosloo in jail for murdering that cop all those years ago, to which I'd say, that's a beautiful fantasy, but I don't think you have any evidence he did that. You have the declaration of a guy who is now dead, and the only person he declared it to is another guy who is now dead. So unless you have a bunch of evidence, you're probably not going to get away with
it. Unless the one guy, the other guy who is still alive, turned state's evidence and said he did it.
Yes, but then he would go to jail or get executed too. So I don't see him doing that either.
Well, you never know, because if he doesn't, his daughter's never going to speak to him again.
Yeah.
And he'll never see his grandchild.
But you also never get to see your grandchild if you get hanged by the neck until dead in a South African prison.
Come on.
I'm just saying, in all likelihood, people generally don't confess to things that are going to get them executed, even if it means their family will be mad at them, as a general rule.
Well, unless of course, they offer him a deal.
Yeah, they might offer him a deal, but I don't know why they would.
Well, they might, to get the other guy back.
Yeah, that is possible.
You know, because the other guy was clearly the ringleader.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that went to the States.
Might want him dead, but I'm just saying I think it is wishful thinking that these guys are going to go to jail for this.
I don't care.
I know you don't care, but I'm just saying.
It was a satisfying ending.
It's a satisfying ending, but it smacks of wishful thinking, the idea that these guys are going to go to jail for a murder they committed for the government 30 years ago. That's not the kind of thing that happens.
But what I would, I'm just thinking, I decided not to go down that road because we have for the first time at least a sort of satisfying.
Oh, absolutely.
And a story that tracked and it was so funny when the military guy comes in and he says he'll take Ananda with him. Well, why can she go?
I know.
Well, because she speaks with the dead. She communes with the spirits.
I know.
Right? So she can come. And so then she says, oh, Jack does too.
Very funny.
And so Jack could come. And I'm cracking up.
Although, but I mean, I got to say, I think my point is right. And the episode missed a chance to make a strong point about, you know, the danger of revenge and the pointlessness of revenge, which is, had this guy who was angry about his sister's death just gotten the guy to write down his confession and tell him where the diamonds are, they could have gone to the cops and put these guys in jail. But because he wanted personal revenge, right, they'll probably get away with it. And that would have been a really strong message to end the episode on. That it's like, this kind of personal revenge isn't worth it. Like, you don't murder children in secret. You publicly shame their parents for the crimes they did.
Yes.
You know, and you make sure that they're...
Apparently he was already a little...
he was already unhinged. A little unhinged, yeah. But I'm just saying, that would actually have been a really strong message for the episode to end with. And then he's conveniently killed off when he dies from... dies within 1 second of being stabbed in the lower abdomen. It's funny. Matt tackles him and they both fall to the ground. And then he rolls over and he's got this piece of glass or a knife sticking out of his stomach. And then he dies 1.5 seconds later.
Yeah, like, well, I'm sorry. Nobody pulled the glass out. So therefore...
What exactly is killing him? I'm not 100% sure.
Well, it
was stabbed in the neck.
Well, he had a heart attack and died. How's that?
There you go.
You know, he didn't die from his wound. He had a heart attack.
Yeah, but fundamentally,
there are terrible things about this, the plot that don't track.
But it's a pretty solid episode.
The beginning was not, I was not impressed with the beginning.
No.
And I thought, but it got better.
Yeah, over the course of the episode. That's absolutely right.
Over the course of the episode, it got better, and it did have a satisfactory ending.
Absolutely.
Whether it was a realistic ending.
No, it's not realistic, but it's still satisfying. It's what you want to feel walking out of the theater kind of thing.
Yeah. And
I agree with that.
And compared to everything we've seen up to this point.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge improvement.
It 100%. Was a huge improvement. I mean, and he didn't go. I mean, they were still, you know, sticking their noses up in the air, you know, like when you had the coroner go in, you know, and then she's looking. It's anyway. Oh no.
Yeah, they still take their time to harshly judge.
Yes.
The working methods of the local cops. That there's still an opportunity to do that.
Including using the spirits talker.
I know, but on the one hand, the one good thing is, yes, a guy kills people in what's supposed to be an elaborate tribal theme, but he does it because that's what the evil white cops had done in the past, not because he's trying to frame local gangs for it.
Right.
So, you know, even that is less offensive than the racialized crimes and the, you know, oh, well, all crimes have to do with your cultural heritage. We've stuck on in the past in previous episodes of the show.
Yeah.
So even that is not painful here like it has been in the past. So, yeah. Way to go. This episode and only this episode.
Yes. Right. Yeah, and only this episode.
Let's move on to the next episode.
The Ballad of Nick and Nat. As I said, their
Borderlands episode. Yeah.
When American victims are found in different locations throughout Cuba, the international response team heads to the island nation to search for possible spree killers. And this was every bit as bad and horrible
as you would assume it was.
Yes.
Based on the press.
And I did double check to make sure of when all of the restrictions were loosened.
Yeah.
And that was 2015.
Yeah. So the year this was shot.
So this was this is a horrible thing you have done, President Obama. This is one of your god awful. Look how horrible Cuba really is. I thought, are you out of your freaking mind?
Good question.
This was the unbelievable. Now, I mean, lots of people wanted to leave Cuba because they never could, right?
Yeah, obviously.
At times, like I've met lots of, I've had students who were Cuban. I've met lots of people who got away from Cuba. But they were, and the thing is I'm listening to this crap that's coming out of their mouths about Cuba, and I'm going, you know, like Canada has relationships with Cuba.
Every other country in the world has normalized relations with Cuba, except for America.
And the Cubans, right? And they don't really have that many problems when they go. People go down to Cuba to get get married even. It's like one of those destinations. There are sometimes problems. I mean, we had a group of students that went down to Cuba because there was a course on sort of, that kind of Caribbean history, right?
Okay.
And so they went down to Cuba. No.
Totally normal place to go.
You know, there's all sorts of things. And yes, I grant you that if you live in Cuba, it might be nice to be able to get, you know, new cars and things like that. And then, but they have a decent healthcare system. They have, well, remember when Michael Moore went to Cuba?
Yes, I know.
That was the funniest thing. You've got to watch his. I mean, even if you don't like Michael Moore, because lots of people don't like Michael Moore.
Yeah. But his trip to Cuba was very entertaining.
It was because he took a bunch of Americans.
Yeah, there to get
healthcare. There was all sorts of healthcare that they couldn't get. So he took a whole bunch of, I don't know how the hell he took them there.
I think he probably went through Canada.
Yeah, he probably went
through probably took them all to Canada.
And then you go down to,
and then you go to Cuba. Yeah.
And made the arrangements with Cuba. And Cuba would have said, yeah, okay, yeah, good.
Of course, good publicity for us.
Come. You know,
But listening to them talk about how...
The police and everything...
It's
and
a military dictatorship and how...
Oh,
like,
my God!
It was pretty shocking.
A bunch of Cuban...
bashing nonsense.
Oh,
they really hate Cuba in America.
And they didn't even dwell on the fact, like they at least brought up the fact that this woman, that the girl was attached to.
Yeah.
Right? Hated Batista and loved Che Guevara. The way they talk about Che Guevara.
It's pretty shocking.
God, I'm going. Are you out of your freaking mind? Shall we sit down and talk about your Andrew Jackson?
Yep.
Shall we talk? Are you out of your freaking mind? This was the most of all of the episodes I watched.
This is by far the most insulting. Yeah.
This is the worst in terms.
They full on say in this episode. Then this is 100% true. We're not exaggerating. In this episode, they say that Che Guevara used the fact that there was a revolution going on as an excuse to torture and murder thousands of civilians.
Unbelievable.
That is said by the characters in this episode.
Unbelievable. Yep. Unbelievable.
It's shocking.
I'm going, do you know that Cuba... under Batista has nobody watched Godfather 3?
Part 2. Yep.
Go watch Godfather
2. It was a nightmare.
Cuba was a nightmare. Of course, you know, old Michael Corleone has to get out because the revolution is starting.
Yeah, because he sees that the revolution is coming and he's like, nope.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah, the revolution is coming.
Yeah, and it's like, once people what he points out is, once people have, like, been butchered and battered to the point that they are blowing themselves up to get to you inside their own country, you can't win. You've lost.
Yeah,
you've lost. Right? And that is his point. And that is the kind of state that Cuba was in when they threw out Batista.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. There was no justice. There was no law and order. There was just what rich people wanted and the people who got crushed by what the rich people wanted. That's all Cuba was under Batista. It is good that a Cuban revolution threw all of the rich Americans out, who had been nothing but exploiting that country and treating it as their personal playground for, 50 years at that point?
It was, and so Castro came in, and I will tell you, you watch this episode, you know why Bernie Sanders should have kept his mouth shut. Somebody should have sent the ballot of Nick and Nat to Bernie.
I know. About it's like how much the media will always be against Cuba.
It's because the people who left Cuba had money, and all of a sudden they didn't have money anymore, and then other people left for whatever reason, right? I mean, it's, you can watch actually Miami, CSI Miami, you see a couple of these things going on.
It's touched on there.
And some of the stuff that comes over, and so the Cuban Hispanic community in the United States, of course, is extraordinarily anti-Castro.
Still, they would be.
And their children, because they lost everything. They lost their power. They lost everything. Yep. And then there were shopkeepers and the rest of it. It's sort of like Ayn Rand and her response to Russia.
It's almost exactly like that. Like, she's so become so obsessed with what her family lost in the Russian Revolution that she develops this entire insane nihilistic philosophy that tries to just...
It's now rampant in the United States.
Oh, yeah. That it just tries to be, well, I'll just do everything opposite of what socialists believe or communists believe, and I'll pretend that that's like an internally consistent way you can build a society. And of course, it's not. All of the things she believes are idiocy, but that's just a fact. And I mean, I think this plague, if, it turns out no matter how many super capitalists you have, the minute poor people stop going to work, everything disappears. Turns out money doesn't mean anything anymore if poor people stop going to work. Who would have thunk it?
And I hope everybody, we've talked about Snowpiercer before.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's got to go watch Snowpiercer.
It's amazing. It's even about trains, for God's sake. In case you don't understand why that's important, Atlas Shrugged is largely about trains. It's a very dumb book that is largely about, building a train bridge over the Mississippi.
Well, I can't figure out which is dumber, The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged.
Fountainhead's probably... Well, no, Atlas Shrugged is dumber because The Fountainhead is just like a character talking about her principles and living her principles in the real world, and it's all very stupid. Atlas Shrugged is worse because it's a sci-fi future meant to, like, show why her theories are so important. And if you haven't read the book, the funniest part about the book is, right? So the whole concept is, what if all the rich people went on strike? A society would collapse, right? Obviously, it would just resort to barbarism immediately, and the world would fall apart if all the rich people just left. And the funny part about the book is, so when she was sitting down to write it, she obviously tried to come up with ways that the world would be worse if rich people left. And like, how would this actually negatively impact people's lives? And no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't come up with any. So the plot instead of being, what if the rich people left? It was, what if the rich people on their way out the door blew up all of America's infrastructure? Well, yeah, no, things might go badly for America
their
way out the door, the rich people blew up all of America's infrastructure. Probably. But I think people could still put things together afterwards without too much difficulty. But yes, it's a very dumb book that a lot of very stupid people use as a way of convincing themselves that they are, secular
superior.
Superman.
Superior to the rest of us dummies.
Yeah, to the rest of us dummies, because we're not sociopaths.
No, it was just. Anyway,
it's shocking.
But this book, this episode, as
I know,
I said,
to
Bernie,
listen to
Bernie
the...
should have.
No, you're right. He should have watched it, because to listen to their, their character assassination of the entire Cuban Revolution.
And the Cuba as it still existed.
Yeah.
And everything, and then that sop at the end, giving the Cuban cop, his invitation to go to Quantico. Oh, fuck off.
Oh, no, we white Americans will teach you how to be a real cop. Jesus Christ, this show. Like, even for this show, that was pretty bad.
Oh, also, and that I can't was stress, supposed to be the happy ending?
And that's your happy ending. Don't you get it? He'll get to work with Americans now. What every non-American secretly wants. To become as American as possible. Well, I mean, but that's a continuing theme on the show. The only cops they ever respect are the ones who have gone through a program with Jack and Quantico. Like, that's been a theme of the show for in every, well, not every episode, but in every episode where there's someone who Jack already knows because they did a program at Quantico, those cops get respect. But the rest of the cops don't. Also, and I can't stress this enough, the team solves nothing this week.
No.
Their rampage gets to fully end. If they had all just stayed home and not done anything, the rampage would have ended the exact same way.
Same way, yeah.
They accomplish nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, except to badmouth Cuba, because Obama opened the doors to diplomatic relations with Cuba.
Yeah.
Oh, even the American. Oh, God.
How disgusted they are that the American diplomat is getting in their way because he doesn't want to make waves in this backwater for which they have no respect.
Unbelievable.
No, it's shocking.
And to bring up Bernie's point, okay, as I said, to bring up Bernie's point, the first thing that he did was put in healthcare. And the first thing he did was
it's a fun fact.
The literacy rate.
Well, the literacy rate in Cuba is actually higher than America's literacy rate. That's just a fact. By a lot.
Because everybody was taught how to read and write.
Yeah, no, they have a much better education at dealing with the fundamentals that everyone needs to, like, ensuring that everybody has the fundamentals. Do they have the kind of high-end universities with very respected programs that we have here in Canada and America? No. No one is rushing to Cuba to learn to be a physicist. But they have good medical schools.
Yep.
They have good medical schools down there. Like, you're not going there to learn how to build a spaceship, but if you wanted to go and learn how to be a doctor, there's a hell of a lot worse places to go than Cuba. Yeah. If you want to go the thing is, you can't really go to learn to be a lawyer there because their laws are different than ours, but to be a doctor, 100%.
Like, it's
bodies are the same all over.
Yeah, it is thoroughly amazing what they did in this episode.
No, it is a reprehensible episode from beginning to end.
Absolutely, from beginning to end.
100%. And I hate to say that I'm siding with the killers, but their point that they have to be afraid that America is going to re-Batista Cuba is not a terrible thing to believe, because if you listen to the main characters in this episode, it would have been better off if Batista had stuck around.
You know? Well, yeah, because then they could have made all sorts of money.
Well, exactly.
Because the worst thing that happened was the embargo.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the key part. And that's, I think, what's so disgusting about America's relationship with Cuba is that literally right now, America's biggest trading partner is Canada, and its second biggest trading partner, which is fine. Canada's great. But their second biggest trading partner is China.
Yeah.
Literal police state that has, you know, millions of people in jail for what religion they are or what ancestry they have. Like, a place that is a much worse place to be than Cuba, right, is China. And that has a much worse human rights record. Hell, Saudi Arabia has a worse human rights record than Cuba. You know?
Yeah.
Israel has a worse human rights record than Cuba. And the one country on earth, and this is why, by the way, we come back to it all being about money. The one place that America won't normalize relationships with, that they won't open up trade with, is the place where rich people lost a lot of money. Yeah. And that's what it comes down to. Yeah. Rich people lost a lot of money in Cuba, and so the Cuban government will never be forgiven for costing Americans and Americans' relatives.
Because they refused, because what they did was they nationalized everything in Cuba and refused to pay anybody money.
Yeah.
For, you know, like sometimes when you nationalize.
Well, here's a fun story about a country that had a much rougher time than Cuba because of that. There's this place called Jamaica. I don't know if you're familiar with Jamaica, but it's an amazing country, beautiful country. Rum is basically from Jamaica. If you like rum, you have Jamaicans to thank for that. So it's a wonderful country. I'm pro-Jamaica in all things. But here's the point I'm getting at. They had an awesome slave revolt. It was fantastic. All the slaves killed all the white people. It was amazing. It was miraculous. They ran the French the hell out of Jamaica. It was one of the best things they've ever done. And here's how that can go so wrong right afterwards. The French people who were run out of Cuba, well, their relatives, decided to sue Cuba for all of the money they lost. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Cuba. Oh my God. Jamaica. For all the money they lost. That is all of the money they lost. That is, I keep saying Jamaica. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. Haiti. I'm talking about Haiti. Wow. I am really embarrassed, everybody. I was talking about Haiti and I apologize. So they decide to sue Haiti for all of the money they lost. And it ended up with this horrific situation where to keep from being invaded, their country being invaded by the entire French military, and let's face it, tens of thousands of people being slaughtered, they had to cut a deal to pay back not only the value of all the property they took, so all the estates, all the land in Haiti, blah, 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 but the slaves that were freed had to pay for their own freedom in order to keep France from invading and killing everyone. And that is how badly it can go. But to say this, they had relatively peaceful relationships with other countries afterwards, because by offering to make this payment and doing this, they agreed to be part of the capitalist system.
Yeah.
And the reason that Cuba can never be forgiven is that they were refusing to take part in the capitalist system. And that's why they can never be forgiven. Because China, much scummier country than Cuba, is happy to be part of the capitalist system. Saudi Arabia, a complete trash fire of a country in every way, is happy to be part of the capitalist system. But if you're not willing to be part of the capitalist system, well, they're going to ostracize you and destroy you as hard as they can for as long as they can. And that is why you get an episode of television in 2015 while the president of America is trying to normalize relations with Cuba. You get an episode of television that is all about saying, as you say, he's a fool for doing so. And Cuba is a backwater place that would have been better had the mob been allowed to keep running it. And I know we might say, oh, well, the episode didn't literally say that. Well, if you're talking about what a disaster the revolution was for the people of Cuba, that's exactly what you're saying. If you give us 20 minutes about how awful Cuba is and one line about how Batista was a bad guy, I know where your sympathies lie, and they don't lie with the people of Cuba.
No. And, you know, yeah, I mean, the people of Cuba, it's like everything else. You know, you've got three generations now since the Cuban Revolution. Of course, everybody's forgotten what Batista was like, and everybody wants what America has.
Oh, yeah. Like, I get it. I get why these people feel this way. And I'm not saying they're wrong. Their feelings are wrong. I'm saying you can't forget history or Cuba's going to be yet another country. I mean, look at how close is it to America. It's going to be another Central American country that America steals all the money from and leaves everybody impoverished. That's what Cuba would turn into if they let Americans come back. And again, I'm not saying I'm on the side of the killers this week. I'm just saying the entire plot and premise of the episode suggests they're not 100% wrong.
Well, what I would
doesn't
say
it?
Here, they might have been right, but they went around solving
about it the wrong way.
Yeah.
Running American tourists out of Cuba on a rail might be a good idea, but you're doing it in the wrong way.
Anyway, I will tell you, I just have to do some stats for you.
Please.
They have pulled up for the first season. Their first viewer, these are just U.S. viewers in the millions. Okay. So it was 8.88.
Right.
And then it went down to 7.78, 707, took a little jog up at 744. But by the end, the episode we haven't seen,
Yeah.
Right. Yet it ended up the at the end of it at 5.19.
Oh wow! Billion.
Okay, and the funny thing is
25% drop over the course up and of down, the season,
right? Yeah. Until this episode. This episode had 6.05 million. Then and it went down to 5.94, then 5.74, then 5.19 for the last.
Well, suddenly I feel good about the world. If and people saw this episode and they're like, you know what, maybe we don't need to watch this show anymore.
Yeah, I think that that's what happened. And then they start and then it just keeps going down, 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 down.
Oh, wow.
It ended up at 4.16 million at the end of the second season.
Damn. Wow.
And
yeah, so I guess maybe crazy screeds against Cuba aren't a great way to turn a profit.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because sometimes I have to remember that we do this entire thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, about America, but of course it's not all of America.
Of course it's not.
And the rest of it, but it is this exceptionalism, because what if we've talked about at other times about American exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've talked as much, sort of, as I said, because even the people, even some of these guys on CNN and on MSNBC and the rest of it, I've heard Rachel Maddow, and I'm just going, honey, would you just get off it?
Yeah.
Just get off, even though your brand of exceptionalism is not the same. You just kind of have to.
No, it's it is again. The air they breathe is American exceptionalism, yeah, is the assumption. I mean, I know people don't like The Newsroom. I can never get a good reason for why people don't like The Newsroom, right? Because I guess it's that Aaron Sorkin-y, really, you know, over-the-top optimism and positivity, and people just don't like that in this day and age. They want to be cynical, but, I mean, that whole thing that kicks it all off in the first episode is, they're not wrong to say that it's like, that someone would have their career endangered by saying America isn't the greatest country in the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The air they breathe is the assumption that America is right about things, all things all the time.
Oh, yeah. And for everybody who's listening to this, The Newsroom did it have two seasons?
Three seasons,
yeah. Aaron Sorkin.
They did a third season. Aaron Sorkin, yeah, HBO, The Newsroom.
Yeah.
If you have HBO, if you have HBO Live or whatever it's called, Crave, HBO, and HBO Max is what it's called.
Yeah.
If you have Crave in Canada, you can get HBO. You can just watch all of The Newsroom over the course of a weekend. I hope you really like it. I love the show. But I like that Sorkin-y, overwritten positivity. It's also very funny.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, but I think it wasn't a message that a lot of Americans wanted to hear
at the time. Yeah, it's like being told that America isn't perfect isn't something Americans wanted to hear. Well, you know, then you're not open to criticism, and that's a problem in and of itself.
Yes, then the country in general is Donald Trump.
Trump, yeah. If you're not open to criticism, then you are. Then how are you different to Donald Trump? Because the whole point of American exceptionalism is we don't have to justify the things we do. The things we do are right because we're the ones doing them. Like, we must be doing it the right way. It's the American way.
Yeah, the American way is the only way.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's one of the three things Superman was fighting for. So how could it be wrong? Sorry.
But anyway, so this is the Ballad of Nick and Nat. And it's
maybe their worst. I mean, it's probably going to go downhill. It's not the most racist episode. And you'd think that we would go, given our comments about the show, we would go with the most racist episode and the most xenophobic episode. But we're probably going to unless the last episode of the season is dire. We're probably going to go with this one just because it is the whole show in a nutshell. It's, you know, celebration of American exceptionalism is this episode is the show's worldview in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's the worst of it all. It is unbelievable. unbelievable. Now, of course, then we've got another season to watch, so they're
making... Oh, I know. No, they could still do worse, but this one is very shocking. I'm not saying that I'm sure they're not going to do worse than this going forward. It's Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. I would put nothing past them. But there is a good chance this is going to be as bad as it gets.
And all I right, so sorry for that couple. Oh, God, no. Oh, and of course, we're supposed to take the sop that the guy who raped her that started all of this is going to go to jail in Cuba.
Yeah, and that's great, but seriously?
Seriously? That's the best you can do?
That's the best you can, the closest you can come to a happy ending this week?
No, that poor yeah. couple. Anyway, so now we are now going to go and rehash.
Yeah.
An old format.
Yep.
Of the first three episodes of the first four.
Yeah.
We've just gone to the well. Like, at least with Criminal Minds, it took them a while. They didn't always go to the well so obviously.
I know.
But here, so El Toro Bravo. So let me read. I'm reading the IMDb. They're not as satisfying as the Wikipedia ones, but I can't blame the Wikipedia guy for not wanting to
watch the show or, you know, commemorate it in any way, shape, or form.
Yes. The IRT heads to Pamplona, Spain during the running of the Bulls. The ears of a missing American tourist are found, and the team speculates that the crime is politically motivated.
Because it's kind of a silly reason to think it. Oh, well, some of the holy places where he dumped them are important to the Basques. Yeah, okay, but I mean, do you have more of a reason to think it's politically motivated?
And besides, there were three.
Yeah.
Three the year before, and they were Australian, and the Basques didn't take any, didn't send out any threatening notes.
About that, so,
just because the Basques.
It's a weird assumption.
Yeah. The Basques
it's a weird assumption they make.
Spain's Quebec, you know?
Yeah. And that is a very weird way to describe them, but I think that's 100% accurate. Although I worry that non-Canadians listening to this will have no idea what we're talking about.
Well, they can go read a history book.
Okay, there you go.
And go look up FLQ on Wikipedia.
Yeah, they have a very similar character. Anyway, so let's get to it. Yes, Tony Plana is in this episode.
I
know. Co-star of one of
Bakersfield.
Our favorite TV shows of all time.
Bakersfield
PD. It's also where we first found out about Giancarlo Esposito.
Yes.
Who was the star of Bakersfield PD, one of the great TV show comedies ever?
Ever.
Yeah. It was this thing on Fox. It was unbelievably good. You can't watch it anywhere. It is disgusting that we can't watch.
Yeah, there was 1 year. There was a whole year of it. I don't know why.
I think it was only like 16 episodes. Like, no, I think it got canceled before the end of the season. Oh, it was a full 22 episodes.
And it was a full season. They did get a full season out of it, and then
the point is, it was an interesting, the premise of the show is, and we're not going to talk about this long, because if we can track down the episodes, we'll just do an episode about Bakersfield PD, because of how much we love it. But yeah, we're not going to get into that right now. But the premise of the show is that a guy, Giancarlo Esposito, and his wife went to do fertility treatments to have a kid, and it was one of those horrible doctors who just uses his own sperm to have the kid. And so Giancarlo Esposito is like, wait a minute, you're telling me that here in Washington, D.C., or Baltimore, or wherever he lived, there are 300 kids who are half-siblings?
Of mine.
Well, no, of my son. Yes. My son has my son is not genetically my son, and he's got 300 to 500 half siblings or some crazy number. Might have been 80, but it's like, oh wow, we better get, for the sanity of our family in the future, we better get the hell. And so he goes literally as far as he can go to find a job, and he winds up in Bakersfield, California.
Yeah.
And it is then one of my favorite police comedies of all time. It's fantastic from beginning to end. And Tony Plana is one of the beat cops. Him and Chris Mulkey play a partners. And he's the sensitive one, and Chris Mulkey's the idiot, and they provided some of the best scenes in the show. Like, they were fantastic together.
It was just great. I mean, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine
is my second favorite.
Starting to get to that kind of level.
Yes.
That
Bakersfield was at right from the gate, like right from jump. It was a fantastic show.
And then when my ex-brother-in-law moved to Bakersfield, that was all I could think. Frank moved to Bakersfield.
That's so strange.
Yeah, I know. It was the weirdest thing, but his wife got a job in Bakersfield and he was retired, so.
Yeah, what the hell? Moves to Bakersfield, of all things. But anyway, so that's why we love Tony Plana. That's why we were happy to see him in this episode playing a priest working with the least plausible priest dilemma I've ever seen. Because the other thing is, priests aren't allowed to say what they do in what they hear in confession. But here's the thing. It has been well established by legal precedent and by what the church does that if a priest knows you're going to murder someone, the priest can call the cops. And yet they act like it's this giant dilemma by the priest about whether or not he can give them any information. It's like, no, if there were just dead bodies dropping, like if there had been three bodies and a guy confessed and there was nothing more, but the priest is told in their first interaction that he currently has someone locked up somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? That right away removes the whole dilemma for the priest. The minute the priest knows that someone is just locked up in a cell somewhere about to be murdered, the priest is free to say, oh yeah, it's Simon. Just go get Simon. It wouldn't be difficult at all. Like, and they act like it's still a thing for the priest, but no, it's like priests aren't, well, I mean, some of them aren't psychopaths, okay? They don't want people to die, generally. I mean, yeah, there are a couple of murderous priests out there. Well, not more than a couple, but there have been murderous priests, is my point. But this guy, he's a good guy. He doesn't want a random person to get killed. He sure as hell doesn't want the guy he's counseling to kill any more people. So it's it would be completely reasonable for him to say, yeah, the guy you were looking for is named Simon. Here's where he lives. You know, go and save that third person. I mean, it turns out it's Simon's father who's doing the killing, but that's not, you know, relevant. I mean, he still knows who the criminal is and where the criminal is. It's just he doesn't know that it's the father rather than the son. But that's not relevant to how the priest can fit into this. Also, it takes them way too long to realize that a matador is responsible for these crimes.
Well, yeah, isn't that the first thing I said when I was looking at those episodes?
When you were talking about the episode last week, is they cut off the ears, and you said, you know, matadors cut the ears off of bulls after they've killed them.
That's exactly what I said.
And my response was, yes, that's one of the only things I know about matadors. Here are the two things I know about matadors, okay? One, they cut off the ears and tails of their prey after they've killed them. I know that. Two, I know that it used to be that people came not to see the matador, but the picador, which is a much harder job originally, because you're being chased on horseback by a bull, and you're throwing spears at the bull and wearing down the bull, and it's actually really hard to not, you know, you've got to throw spears from horseback, which is hard, and B, you've got to keep your horse from getting hit by the bull and getting spooked by the bull trying to kill the two of you. So it's actually a really challenging job. And then originally the matador literally just means the killer would come in and stab the bull when it was too weak, you would put it out of its misery from the chase. But the chase was the fun part. And what they've done is in, you know, 50 years, 60 years, or maybe now 70 or 80 years since that tradition started, they've made it so the fun part is watching the matador actually full on kill the bull. Of course, it's still the job of the picador to really screw up the bull's neck muscles so it's incredibly painful for them to turn left or right, which is the, by the way, that's the trick. When you see bullfighting, you're going to see all around their neck a whole bunch of spears, because the idea is you want it to be so painful for them to turn their head left or right, they can only charge straight ahead. And if the picador screws up that part of the job, then you will get dead matadors, or at least badly gored matadors. So those are the two things I know about matadors. I know that the picador...
We all watched Columbo.
Yeah, we all watched that Columbo episode about it back in the 70s. Was it Jose Ferrer was the killer that time?
No.
Ricardo Montalban was the killer that time. Right. Yes. Jose Ferrer was the genius whose son had stolen his PhD thesis.
Yeah.
And he killed the guy to cover up for his son, who was disrespecting the family. God, Columbo's the best show. Yes. Okay, no, you're right. The Matador. But let's get back to this episode.
Okay, can I get back to this other issue?
Please.
You can tell how much. Okay, this other issue about the confessional, right? Yeah. Now, I've just been reading something here because I was listening to you and I'm going, not exactly, because now it turns out, okay, that if you give someone in a confessional absolution, then you are not allowed to ever say anything about it. Now, in the case, I'm trying to remember back to the episode when he was in there and he says, but you have to tell somebody and the rest of it. He doesn't give him absolution.
No, he doesn't.
So he could have said it, although it is apparently still a thorny theological dilemma in the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, so if it's a true confession, but definitely if he had given him absolution, he could not have said anything. Yes. However, he could have, but then we wouldn't have had the wonderful scene where he gives them the fancy schmancy stuff about the Bible.
I know.
I mean, these Catholics who know the Bible, it's beyond me. I mean, Gary Sinise is not of the age where he would have had much in the way of learning what the Bible really says.
Nope.
In Catholicism, it was not a big part. It wasn't like going to Sunday school in Protestant churches.
No.
You know,
chapter and verse that bad boy.
Friggin', yeah, chapter and verse that bad boy. I tell you, I can still, my problem is that when I chapter and verse it, because I can still do it, right? Yeah. But I have to sort of access the recesses of my brain. But when I access it, I always access it in the King James Version, which of course is just very problematic, but never mind. But
that was the puzzling thing about the episode is, and I think that the people who write it are so religiously illiterate, they just assume anyone who is, you know, familiar with religion is able to quote the Bible. But as you say, that's not what Catholics are like.
Well, that's what most people are like. Nobody would figure that one out from it's in the Old Testament and it's in Second Peter. Give me a freaking break. And Peter's name was changed to Simon.
From
was
Simon.
Really Simon?
Yeah.
No, his name wasn't changed to Peter.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I mean, it's just like it's this whole thing. It's because of the Roman, right?
Yeah.
You know, never mind.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to, it doesn't matter.
It's not worth going into right now, but yeah. That's the fact is that the shortcut that these writers use to say, he's a man of God he's memorized the Bible. It's just a short form that all of these writers always use, even though that's not true to almost anyone.
What I'm trying to figure out is where they get their theological stuff from. Right.
I know.
Okay. Yes.
God. Watching the two of them sit there, I'm like, I just couldn't help but think about suspect behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, Forrest Whitaker going to chat with his priest from time to time, and them having a strange conversation with him and a serial killer about demonology.
Yeah.
Still one of the weirdest scenes the show has ever, like, either of these shows has ever done. But yeah, like, no, these are not people who, this is writing about religion by people who don't 100% understand religion.
Get it. Yeah. But anyway.
Don't really get it.
Yeah. But we've already seen a drop in viewership anyway, so.
Yeah.
This episode.
This wasn't going to scare people off.
You know.
It's not a great episode. It's pretty much just a generic Criminal Minds episode. There's a guy kidnapping and murdering people. The fact that it's, you know, themed around bullfighting goes back to that ridiculous thing we always talk about on this show, which is that every murder has to be about what your ancestors did for a living.
Yes. Or yes. As I said, we went back to the well.
Yeah, we did. But it's not that much of a, the thing I honestly, it's not a great episode, but the thing that bothered me most is that none of them says, like, the minute this corpse turns up without its ears during the running of the bulls, mm-hmm. not one character says, hey, you know, bullfighters cut off bulls' ears. But we have to wait until halfway through the episode for someone to notice that. How? If I know it, it's not that, you know, it's not that an obscure fact about bullfighting. Even if the team doesn't know it, I feel like one of the Spanish people who live in Pamplona do.
Yes!
A town kind of famous for its association with bullfighting. Like, how do you people not bring it up? And the reason they can't bring it up is the cops, the local cops, are never allowed to bring up anything on this show.
They heaven forbid that they would be right.
Yeah, heaven forfend that one of the local cops ever have a piece of information the team doesn't have.
And then this stupid business about how he must be angry at God and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Because he put it in the church, and I'm just like, oh, Jesus.
Mark. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was bad, and when What's-Her-Face, Ana Fuentes, or whatever her name is.
Yeah, whatever the character's name is.
Whatever the character's name is, when she, you know, when she's with the coroner and she says something, and she said, and the coroner, the Spanish coroner, just looks at her and says, well, yes, we figured that out, you know, already. And I'm just going, well, at least somebody put that kind
finally
of, you know we're not all idiots here.
I know. You seem to be assuming that everyone who isn't in the FBI is a moron.
Yeah.
That's not a safe assumption to make.
Well, if they make it in the States, if they make it in America, the greatest country in the world,
you're right.
And, you know,
they're only going to think even less. You're right. Like,
of everybody.
They think a local sheriff in Oklahoma doesn't know what they're doing. Imagine what they think about the federal police in Mexico.
Oh, God, the federales.
I know. Oh, I know. Oh, I know. So, yeah, it's, that's the thing. It's not a super objectionable episode.
No.
I think, as I pointed out, the religious stuff I felt was very shallow. It's not a great episode by any means, but it's not rip-roaringly offensive the way we're used to
no.
here on the show.
Well,
it's not
after,
actively
after
trying
Cuba?
To make us angry. After Cuba, and that's the thing. It's like, because I watched it after the Cuba episode, I'm like, yeah, this is earning a lot by
not being the Cuba episode.
By not being the Cuba episode. It's earned itself a lot of goodwill. All right. So that's the three episodes we watched this week. Let's move forward with... What's our homework for next time? What's the premise of the 13th episode?
Oh, God, we're going to go to Haiti.
Oh, my God. So all my rambling about Haiti, which I accidentally said was Jamaica, I'm not going to live that one down for a while.
No, Jamaica was a British... colony.
Yes, British colony, not a French colony, the way Haiti was, which is why everyone from Haiti still has French names. But continue.
Yes.
What's the title of the episode?
Paper.
Right, it's the one that I assume is going to be voodoo themed. Yes.
Or it's going to be how after the hurricanes and stuff.
Yeah.
What I would assume is that whoever the bad guy is, it's someone, because all these Americans went over there after a hurricane and a
giant earthquake,
the massive earthquake. That's right. It wasn't the hurricane. Yeah. It was a massive earthquake. And they went over there and they took orphan, they just started to
snatching children.
Americans started to adopt all of these Haitian children.
Yeah.
And so I would assume that, now this is my prediction.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but it's called paper orphans. That, of course, that some child who was adopted, of course, wasn't an orphan. And so there's one of the parents or somebody who's decided to take it out and kidnap
on
children
somebody.
of American families.
Probably that's what the plot is going to do.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
So I guess what we're saying next week is, before next week, watch the episode if you want to, but also read about the orphan the situation with orphans being en masse adopted by American organizations after that massive hurricane. After that massive earthquake that leveled half of the country.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It should be an interesting story. So, but in addition to that, if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, we would love to hear from you at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. Beyond that, if you're listening to this on some sort of a podcatcher or podcasting app, podcatching app on your phone, be sure to give the show a rating because that's what helps people find it. We'll see you back here next week for that one episode and our final thoughts on
best and worst.
Yeah, the best and worst. Oh, we know what it's going to be. They were both this episode. Best and worst of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. But until then, I'm going to say see you on Thursday. But until then, au revoir.
Have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.